Hi, I'm Dr. Marcia, and this is the Self-Care Chronicle. As a licensed psychologist, I know that I need to practice good self-care to maintain my mental wellness. But maintaining my self-care routine can be a struggle when things get hectic. So I started reaching out to my peers to ask them about their experiences with self-care, and I learned that many of my fellow mental health professionals have similar experiences. Join me each week as I connect with a fellow mental health professional to discuss the challenges of managing our own mental wellness in the midst of a pandemic, social unrest, increasing demand for our services, and a struggle to embrace a me-first ideology, which sometimes feels wrong to a helping professional. Welcome to the Self-Care Chronicle. Welcome back to the Self-Care Chronicle. This week, I'm connecting with Sonia Ross, LCSWC. Ms. Ross is the CEO and founder of Full Circle Therapy Services, a private practice focused on the unique emotional needs of Black women. She is also the author of Master Your Depression, A Black Woman's Guide to Emotional Wellness. After the show, find out more about Ms. Ross and her incredible work at drmarciabrown.com. And welcome, Ms. Sonia Ross. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. So let's just jump right into it. Can you talk a little bit about your journey into your current position? Why and how did you choose to become a mental health professional? Mm-hmm. And then once you decided you were going to be a mental health professional, how did you get to serving the population that you specialize in?
Sure. So I don't mind being honest. My journey is not typical. I honestly felt like I had no position to talk or give anyone else any type of therapeutic services regarding their mental health. So when I went to school to get my social work degree, I was totally not going to go into mental health because I was like, honestly, I thought it was boring talking to people all day. So I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. So I went into medical social work and that was fine. But as I started to get like more towards my calling, which was serving low economic people, of course, most of them look like us. They were Black. And I was talking to a colleague and she recommended I do some part-time work as a therapist. And, you know, during that time, I was kind of putting together just what was happening for our people in the community I was serving in Washington, D.C., and just making some linkages between some systemic issues, what I was learning about trauma and how it seemed clear at this point that we were very traumatized as Black people, but no one was ever speaking to it in a clear and distinct way. And so I still didn't have a lot of confidence in my ability to be a therapist, but I received some mentorship and some supervision and people who told me that I had a skill for it and that I should continue on. And just as the years progressed, Dr. Brown, I just really had to start to think, I do feel like I'm connecting with people. I do feel like I'm helping people. And I had to work on my own confidence, my own belief in myself that I had an ability to speak to someone else's issues or challenges. And so through training and my own recovery and my own mental health process, I was able to see I do know what I'm talking about. I'm by no means an authority on anybody else's life. I'm only my own, but I was connecting with people in a deeper and deeper way. And so as I started my own practice, which I started about it'll be 4 years in May, I really started saying to myself, you know, what is it that my community needs? What is not being said here? And in schooling and trainings and things like that, they were never speaking about what our experiences were as Black people and as Black women in particular, living within a system of racism and white supremacy, the impact of trauma and oppression on our bodies. And so as I started going to more trainings and again, continuing parallel my own mental health recovery process, I knew what had helped me and I knew that my community needed access to these things too. And so I eventually started honing down on my message, which was to help Black women heal their bodies from trauma and oppression. So if you're in a therapeutic space with me, I bring in the lens of trauma and oppression, systemic racism, the myth of white supremacy, how we as Black people, especially Black women, embody a lot of anti-Blackness. And it's the foundation, unfortunately, of our lives. And it's severely impacted our relationship with ourselves internally and externally.
That's fantastic. That's a really interesting and powerful journey and powerful message and such important work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We don't often hear about people who say they want to distinctly work with Black people. You know, as I've been more public about saying, yes, I do want to work with Black people. Yes, I want to work with Black women in particular. I've received many positive messages from people, especially younger clinicians coming into the field saying, oh, yes, I want to do that too. You know, how did you get started on your journey? Things like that. But, you know, from clinicians who are in my, you know, peer group, I sometimes get a little bit of like, you know, they're not saying it, but I feel from them that some of them feel like, oh yeah, that's nice, but and that's just anti-Blackness. The fact that if you say that you're choosing to work with Black people, number one, since we're kind of viewed negatively throughout society, a lot of clinicians have embodied that and they don't want to be only associated with working with Black people intentionally.
Right. And you said that you hear sometimes, oh, that's nice, but, and can you talk a little bit about what the specific buts have been or the things that people have used to sort of justify saying that that was not a good idea?
Just that maybe I was limiting myself in some way, and that they want to, the other clinicians have told me they want to be known for working with everyone, which is a multiracial group, interracial group, whatever the case may be, you know, but then also they'll be telling me at the same time they get the most satisfaction when they work with Black clients. I said, oh, well, why don't you specialize in working with that? Oh, well, I don't want to just be seen as a Black therapist. What's wrong with that?
Absolutely. I love that. Yep. Can you talk a little bit about the most stressful thing about your job for you right now?
In the beginning of the pandemic, it was hard because we all just suddenly made a shift. Everybody's life changed like suddenly. So, you know, as a human being, I'm adjusting to my life changing and my clients adjusting to their life changing. And sometimes it has been more stressful because the women I serve, because our community has been so oppressed, they hold a lot of trauma in their bodies and it comes out. But then you add the pandemic and then you add the racial unrest. And then I'm dealing with all these same things in my own body. And so there were some days that were definitely very, very challenging, especially last May and June. Lots of crying, lots of sobbing, cursing, explosive anger. And it was a lot to hold. It was a lot to hold.
Absolutely. In light of everything that's happened, have you found a way to manage it and keep going? Or is it still something that you're adjusting to?
No, you know, I had my stress management skills are actually pretty good because as I said earlier, I am a trauma survivor. And so I had been taking my mental health recovery very, very seriously. So I had a lot of coping skills to deal with what was happening. So while it was stressful, I knew that the things I had been doing in the years previous had really worked because I was pretty well regulated. Of course, when there were spikes with COVID and then the murder of George Floyd and the rage that came up in people about that, of course, I felt that stress acutely, but I always had my skills to help to regulate myself through that process. And I just was very clear on my boundaries that I know that I'm a trauma survivor. I know that I've had my own mental health struggles for a very long time, so that I had to make sure that I had survived this whole time period with my own mental health intact. So I didn't take on any new clients. I took time off. I just sat with myself and gave myself the permission to eat what I wanted, to nap, to sleep in, not be as hyper-focused on goals and things like that, because I can be a very structured person. I just had to take care of myself. And I didn't put any burdens on myself. Like I had to show up and be extra accomplished, extra, you know, bring in more clients because so many people needed me. I said, no, I need myself first. I have to remain intact. And that's really, really important because I'm important.
Absolutely. That is really important to have that and understand that you come first and you have to be able to take care of yourself first and foremost. Because I think that we frequently receive a message as Black women that everybody else comes first and that everybody else is more important and that we need to be holding down the fort, so to speak. And if we're holding down the fort 100% of the time, 24/7, what does that leave for us?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you're in your mental health recovery process and you're doing it with intention, you know what it feels like to not be well. And I was like, well, this is not the space for me to be well at all. And those of us who can acknowledge that we've been in those places, it's a horrible place to be. It feels horrible. It just is. There's no real word for it unless you've actually struggled with your mental health. So I wasn't going to put myself back in that place under any circumstances.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Can we go back for a second? I just wanted to ask you, you did mention this already, but I just wanted to talk some more about when COVID-19 hit. Can you talk a little bit about how that changed your practice in terms of your ability to serve the women that you work with? What sort of shifts did you have to make, if any, to accommodate that?
Yeah, I just made the shift here in Maryland. Where I am, a governor said that we had a stay-at-home order beginning March 13th. And so March 13th, I just went completely virtual. And I've been virtual ever since.
Okay. Then can you talk a little bit about, I know that you were used to seeing most, if not all, patients face-to-face. Was mm-hmm. there any adjustment for you as a clinician in terms of getting used to connecting with people through a screen versus face-to-face in the room?
I have an office that's very nice and has warm orange tones, and I have my diffuser and things like that. So originally when I started taking sessions, I was like in the corner of my bedroom for like 6 weeks, 2 months, and feeling uncomfortable physically, trying to adjust to talking, just the weirdness of the screen constantly, just adjusting to that process. It was definitely disorienting. But what I decided to do is about, I think around May or maybe late May, I decided I'm going to get dressed every day. I'm going to get dressed. I'm going to put my clothes on like I would just to go to the office, and I'm going to go move downstairs and sit on my couch with my TV tray stand and my computer. And that's going to be my office. And so that helped to ground me and help me feel like I was setting up an atmosphere so I can shift mental states and by changing my space.
That's a really good idea. It sounds like it was very effective as well.
Yeah, I just got on a routine. I got up, I did everything I would normally do in the early mornings, got up, took my shower, laid out my clothes, got dressed, and I was down in my quote unquote office by 9:45 to have my first session.
Right. Yeah, because that gives you a routine and a sense of control, because there was so much going on that we were not informed of, or we had no idea. We were getting conflicting messages. So this was definitely, it sounds like it was a way for you to have some control over your day, over what was going on, versus just playing it by ear and flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think like a lot of people, those first 6 or 8 weeks, I was definitely in loungewear. I was in loungewear a lot. I had various forms of loungewear that I was in, but I was like, I have to get dressed. And so I started getting dressed.
You talked about you have been very good with minding your mental health and making sure that you are doing well and that you take care of yourself first. Can you talk a little bit about how you practice self-care, like what your go-to methods are? What are some of the things that you can always go to replenish your mental health stores?
Yeah, I had to develop an arsenal, and I had to do it and not feel guilty, because similar to what she was saying earlier, you know, they want Black women to be mules. They want us to be mammies. They want us to give, 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 and things like that. And I had to understand that I'm a trauma survivor. I had to accept that that was my reality. My experiences affected my brain. And because of that, I have to be very, very careful not to push myself, not to be too stressed out, and to do things that support me in, you know, getting lots of sleep, eating proper foods, taking my vitamins, going to therapy. You know, right now I see an acupuncturist once a week because I have a medical condition, but it also helps with a lot of other things. My anxiety was pretty well managed, but the acupuncture actually helped to reinforce that. So I have an arsenal of things. I mean, I have to do something every single day.
Oh, nice. So it's got to be for you a daily practice, and you have an arsenal of things. Mm-hmm. And so how do you decide on each day what it is you'll practice? Do you just decide like in the moment which tool you'll pull out of your arsenal?
You know, as I went into my trauma recovery process, I really had to learn to be in tune with my body and listen to my body. So generally speaking, most days I need some type of nap, and I give myself permission to take a nap. And so making sure I have a good amount of sleep is really beneficial, and just seeing what I need and not judging myself harshly. And if I didn't accomplish all my goals that day, it's okay. And so I have some standard things such as eating right, taking my vitamins, drinking lots of water. I do deep breathing every day, just checking in and feeling the energy that's in my body, making sure I can take a full breath, you know, in through my nose and out through my mouth, making sure that my belly rises and falls, making sure I'm actually in my body. And I'm like, so I'm not always in my head. I just slowing down so I can feel myself just being in my body, feel the energy radiating from my body, helps to ground me in the moment. And so those are just simple things I just do every day. And then I have my weekly acupuncture, and I see a therapist every other week.
That's an excellent arsenal of things that seem to work really well for you. And I know that you said that because of your experiences, you had to come up with this arsenal to make sure that you could maintain good mental health. I don't know if there ever was a time for you, but was there a time while you were doing this work, while you were trying to serve clients, that you came to the realization that you were putting your work and or your clients ahead of your own mental and or physical health?
Yeah, probably. That's kind of a nuanced question. I don't know if I was putting them ahead of me, but because I hadn't really accepted what happened to me, I was very raw. So when they would tell me that something happened that was violent, I would get disturbed inside. I would still be able to keep my professional demeanor and stuff, but I would feel like unsettled. I would feel deeply unsettled. And my anxiety would kind of ramp up. But once I started to, you know, intentionally manage my trauma recovery process, then that kind of settled so they can share. I never limited what they could share, but they can be as raw and as unfiltered as they want. And now I'm able to have a nice equilibrium. So it wasn't so much I was putting them before me, but I could, what they said could be triggering for me. But now as I'm speaking to you, I think one thing that did happen, and again, I think this is part of my trauma response. Sometimes I wanted to rescue them. And from there, and I had to realize their journey is just as important as mine. And if they're going to make this decision, I just have to respect it, even though I thought it could be harmful, and really be okay with it. Like really being okay with them making whatever choice they needed, even though I felt, or I would feel, or it seemed clear that this would be something that would be harmful to them.
Okay. All right. Can you talk a little bit about oppression and trauma in mm-hmm. the Black community? These aren't new things, mm-mm. but we definitely had some events that were even more impactful than what we have been going through in our recent history in terms of, you know, 2020 and 2021 with the pandemic, with all of the social injustice and the unrest and the murder of George Floyd and the murder of so many unarmed Black citizens and the terrorist attack at the Capitol in January, and just all of these things going on that mm-hmm. are impacting our communities very directly.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but a lot of times in my training as a mental health professional, you're constantly told that the whole idea is to leave that at the door. So anytime you're seeing somebody all day, whatever their experiences are, you have to just leave that at the door so you can go home and live your life and do your yeah. thing. But for us, we can't do that because all of these things that our clients, our patients are bringing to us in the office about their fears, their anxieties, about all these things that are going on and understandably so, there's no way to disconnect from that because these are our fears too. These things affect us as well. So can you talk a little bit about how you were able to, and I know part of it may have to do with self-care, but how you were able to, in light of the fact that you too are affected by all of these things, how are you able to not absorb that all day and make it so that you can't function because not only do you have your own personal concerns and anxieties, but you're taking on those of the community as well. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. So what I had to do in the beginning, I think the first 3 months of the pandemic, I'm pretty sure I meditated every day. I would do a meditation from an app, and then I would do a meditation that was on YouTube that was specifically for Black women. So I would do that. And I pray every day. And then I would do visualizations about making sure that I would have a wide enough space within me to hold my clients' emotions without them flooding my own. And so I used to do I did a visualization about that. And those things helped me to kind of have as much ample emotional space within myself to take care of Sonia. And everything that was outside of that was for everybody else. But the space that I hold myself in was, I would envision it being large as an ocean, expansive. And the border outside of that large ocean was for everybody else. If you're getting what I'm trying to describe there.
I do. It makes me think of, and this may be totally off, but it makes me think of, you know, the financial advice to pay yourself first.
Yeah.
And everybody else can figure it out. That's what it reminds me of, is just making sure that you first are, which is important to yeah. take care of. And then what you have left after making sure that you're okay, you're yeah. able to share with the people that you're serving.
Yeah. And so I would do that. And then what I would do, because typically before the pandemic, okay, so I'd get up super early and I'd write and I'd do my own personal work. And then I'd have my days of client sessions. And then sometimes I would get done with my client sessions and do some more of my own personal work. But during the pandemic, the last client, if it was at 5 or 6, it was over. I would come downstairs and I would turn on Star Trek and I would just watch that for hours. And I'm not thinking about anything else, just to give my mind time to rest and process and integrate what has happened, not constantly go, go, go. So honestly, my days seem very kind of compressed because I would have my clients and then I would just be off and I'd sit down and watch TV. And I did that every day. And like I said, I also ate. I ate a lot.
Excellent. Yeah, I think we need that, right? You need that time where your brain is not focused on the world and everything that's going on. You just need that time to escape and think of, you know, something else, another world, and kind of envelop yourself, envelop your mind in something else.
Yeah. And also it was important for me to watch it because it gave me hope. I saw about different species and living together where literally if I turned off the TV, turned off the show, I turned on the news, like people were fighting in the streets.
Right.
It was such a dichotomy and it gave me hope that we could move beyond this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's really important. Are there any other things that are, in terms of self-care, is there anything that is often a challenge or a challenge that you have that comes up regularly in terms of making sure that you're practicing good self-care?
Let me think on that. No, because you know what? God works in mysterious ways. And so I have a medical condition. And because I have the medical condition, I have to go to the acupuncturist. I have to exercise. So I have to take care of myself.
Okay. So in order for you to be at your best, you have to take care of yourself. You have to practice self-care. Otherwise, you're just not doing well.
Yes, exactly. And so I had to get my body moving and I had to start making that investment in myself. And so I got a trainer. And so I've been able to work with him and help my body feel stronger and do the things I needed to do with the acupuncturist. And yeah, it just helped to put things in order and to prioritize things. And so often as Black women, we don't realize that we're not taking care of ourselves till we feel bad.
That's so true. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we're taught that you're fine. You can get through it. So just keep going. So if you don't feel well, just power through it. You'll be fine. It's not that bad. You're fine. Yeah. Just keep going. You're fine.
Yeah. And so I'm not trying to say to you or the audience, like, oh, I take excellent care of myself all the time. There was years where I didn't take care of myself. That's why I'm so vigilant now.
Right. And I think that you're not alone. I think a lot of people find themselves in that very same boat. We don't realize what an amazing and well-oiled machine our bodies are until something doesn't work quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, my body used to do that on its own. Or, oh, my body's been taking on all these things, all these stressors, and I didn't even realize it until something kind of went wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, then you get on the other side of it and you have a diagnosis of a condition and then you're like, oh, wow, this is going to take a while to fix.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. Thank you so much for all of your insight and just such interesting work that you do and your methods of taking care of yourself. And I think that's so important. Do you want to talk a little bit about your practice, any projects that you have coming up, anything like that?
Yeah. So as far as my practice, we're full right now. Like I said, I'm not taking new clients. I am the author of a book called Master Your Depression, A Black Woman's Guide to Emotional Wellness. I can be reached on Instagram at Full Circle Therapy Services, Full Circle Therapy Services on Instagram. It's all spelled out. And if you click the link in my bio, you can get an excerpt of my book. You can get the full book. And every Wednesday on Instagram Live, 3 p.m. Eastern time, I have a class on Black female embodiment talking about helping Black women reconnect with themselves and why it's so important for us to have a positive relationship with our body. Not positive in a superficial cliche, like, girl, you love yourself. No, like how we embody trauma, how we embody oppression, and how to begin the process of undoing that through embodiment, being in our body, breathing, having a nonviolent relationship with our body, looking at our Black bodies, our Black female body with love, compassion, and kindness. So I have the book, I have my Instagram posts, and I have the Black female embodiment class, which is every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on Instagram Live. And there's also a guide that I've created for that class as well, which people can receive at the link in my bio.
Nice. Those are all really excellent resources to have. And what we'll do is we'll go ahead and put links to your website as well as your Instagram on the podcast page so that people can also go ahead and reach you there, just in case they're driving, listening to this, or somewhere where they can't actually write it down. So we'll make sure we'll put that in there as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to any of the previous episodes of the show, but at the very end of the show, I do something called the finisher, which is just a random question that has nothing to do with self-care or stress management.
Sure.
What are the top three destinations on your travel bucket list?
That's an excellent question.
Thank you.
The top three. That I've never been to?
Yeah, let's start with that you've never been to. And then we'll talk about like maybe three that you loved or that you want to go back to.
Sure. So I want to go to Tanzania. I want to go to Kenya and I want to go to Ethiopia.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. So when you travel, what do you like to do?
I like to just hang out and just like look around and just absorb the culture and the scenery. I may do a couple of like scenic type things, but just just absorbing the atmosphere and just watch. I saw this picture of Tanzania just recently. I've seen it before. And the water was so beautiful. I think it was Zanzibar. The water was so beautiful and it was so crystal clear blue. And the sand was white. I was like, that is so gorgeous. And I want to go to Ethiopia because they were never colonized. And I can't remember my reason for wanting to go to Kenya, but I do want to go to Kenya. I have a valid reason. I just can't remember it now.
That's awesome. Yeah. Three places I've heard are really beautiful. And can you talk a little bit about, you said there were places that you would like to revisit because you liked them so much?
Yeah, I went to Jamaica a lot as a kid. And thankfully, fingers crossed, we were supposed to go last April, but we couldn't because of COVID. So we're supposed to go again soon. And I want to go to Jamaica because I had a very difficult childhood. But when I was there, I felt that was one of the places I actually felt like a child. And so I haven't been in like 30 years, 35 years. It's a long time. I haven't been in a long time, but I can't wait to go and show my daughter and just be in that environment again. And growing up in New York, I was always connected to Caribbean culture. And since I spent so much time going to Jamaica when I was a kid, you know, I was very embedded in the Caribbean culture that way. So it was nice for me. So I'm looking forward to going again.
That's really cool. Nice. Okay. Those are really awesome, awesome destinations on the top of your list. Thank you so much again for being here. And this has been really great. I really enjoyed speaking with you. So just thanks so much for your time and just for your views and all the insights that you were able to provide.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate you inviting me, Dr. Brown. And I thank you for your insightful questions. Thank you for making me think and, you know, being an interviewer who actually elicits answers that require depth.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining me for the Self-Care Chronicle. If you enjoyed today's show, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Also, be sure to subscribe to the Self-Care Chronicle on your favorite podcast platform. To find out more about today's episode or to listen to additional episodes, visit drmarshabrown.com. See you next time.